This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. With Halloween only 2 days away, you've probably already carved your pumpkin, stockpiled candy corn, and tried on your costume. But have you rented the monster movie yet? No need to panic. Today we share our favorite monster movies with our favorite film buff, Murray Horowitz, here to help us out. Werewolves, zombies, vampires, aliens, animals gone wild, even some ghosts. What is your favorite monster movie? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can join the conversation on our website at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Murray Horowitz here with us in Studio 3. Always good to have you back in the
good
program.
Good to be back, Neil, but I'm just still wondering how you got somebody with a microphone at my breakfast table.
Just mornings at the Horowitzes, you know.
That's right, yeah. You run into some definitional problems. What makes a monster movie?
One person's problem is another's opportunity, Neil. I decided, you know, I can be very fascistic and maybe something of a monster myself about setting down ground rules, and we will accept this, and we will accept
as rules. You sometimes do on these types.
And so I'm saying I can really be awful about it. I'm somehow... in my dotage, tend to be a little liberal about this one. I mean, beasts are, I mean, there still are some ground rules. No TV. We're not talking about TV at all. These are films. But beasts are, we think of them as things with fangs and, you know, drooling and, you know, scary chimeras of some sort. But really, when you think of monsters, a monster can be anything in a horror film. I mean, it could even be a force. It can be abstract. It can be, but it's something that, and it's something other than human. It's something that can't be stopped, and it'll come after you, or it might. Right, so we're not talking about monstrous human beings. There were no Adolf Hitler in Downfall, or even Eileen Warren and the serial killer in Monster. We mean something other or unnatural. You could have been a human,
and then you'd be a zombie.
Yeah, something supernatural or scientific.
But Hannibal Lecter wouldn't count.
Hannibal Lecter, no. You know, a guy with a knife doesn't count. You could be a guy with a knife.
All right. When you're talking about animals, if you're being chased by a black bear, that doesn't count.
No, because that's a real animal. But if you're being chased...
Right, big sharks.
Big sharks are monsters. Big anaconda snakes, that's a monster. Something unnatural, something that's other than what's in real. And, you know, if you're being... Even something real, like a dinosaur. But if you're being chased by a dinosaur today...
Uh-huh.
Then that's unnatural.
Well, if you're ever being chased by a dinosaur, it's unnatural.
Well, if you haven't you seen, you know, 1 million years B.C.? I mean, if you're Raquel Welch, it's perfectly
there
natural.
Was a documentary, right? Let's get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Doc is on the line from Oklahoma City.
Yep, up until last week, I believe it was Godzilla, but the more I thought about it, I think it was The Thing from Another Planet or Another World, the one that starred James Arness, the old black and white one.
And I think you've extended the title just a bit because it was called The Thing.
Them.
That's them. I apologize. That's not the thing. That's them. Those were the giant ants.
Yes, that's right. These are the...
Is that the one with, was it Jay Whitmore? Didn't he
James
star?
Whitmore
James
was
that's
in
right.
That. Yeah.
That's right.
And the horrible shot of that one was that it first lands on the Washington Monument. There's that little slit, and the guard's looking at the little slit. I was watching it in bed one night on the Late Late Show Part 2.
It's terrifying.
And I pulled up the sheets, and there, I refocused my eyes, was a roach. Right there.
And that explains much, Neil.
It does.
But I want to congratulate Doc and thank him because he started with a film that we really have to get to. The Thing with James Arness was a Howard Hawks movie, one of the great directors, in 51, even though he wasn't credited for it. But there's a remake of it that is one of the great horror directors of our time, John Carpenter's best film. This was 1982, The Thing, and it's scary, and it's just, you know, I recommend it if you really want to get terrified.
And James Arness in the original plays a carrot.
Right.
Okay. Doc, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Steve. Steve with us from Wichita.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
Well, I'm in my 60-ish right now, and when I was in my 30s, I think the scariest thing I ever saw was Alien. To this date, it's still the scariest thing I've ever seen.
Alien. Now, this these are creatures from outer space.
Yes.
They're monsters.
Yes, they are monsters. If you think of the phrase creature feature, I mean, that features a really big creature. And I'm 100% with you. That was so upsetting a movie. I don't think movies have ever given me really bad dreams, except for one, and that was Ridley Scott's Alien in 1979. That is a terrifying movie and a terrifying monster. But as you go on to James Cameron's Aliens, and then David Fincher, Alien 3, which has a bad rep, but is really an underrated movie, the monsters kind of get more humanized. And that's one of the things about monsters. They always have a little bit of humanity to them. They're sympathetic on some level. For example, they can have humor, as they do in some of the later Alien movies.
Yeah, all right. Well, Steve, thanks very much.
You betcha.
Here's an email from Herb in Herb in Chester, South Carolina. He may be named Chester, too, for all I know. He nominates Halloween. What a classic, no real gore, just implied horror, the way they would build to a heart-stopping crescendo, then ease off like nothing would happen, then wham, awesome. John Carpenter really knew his game.
I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up, because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
Ah, Donald Pleasance.
Donald Pleasance in an unpleasant situation. And that's a really good point, because there are some of the slasher movies like Halloween and the Nightmare on Elm Street series and the Friday the 13th series, and these people really are monsters, even though they were human beings. They were human beings, but then something changed them, as Donald Pleasance just told us, into something supernatural, because it's really important to remember, you can't kill these guys. They keep coming back.
We've all seen that. We've all seen that in the film. But then do you get to the Terminator? It's a robot.
Yeah. Well, but now I love this category, because there are categories within the categories. And these are mechanical or otherwise inanimate monsters. So the Terminator is absolutely a monster. In 2001, A Space Odyssey, HAL is a monster.
Is a
after
monster,
all,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And there are even houses. They were talking about haunted houses on NPR's All Things Considered yesterday. And, in The Shining, the Overlook Hotel is...
that is a monster of a sort, I guess. Yeah. All right. Let's go next to Josh. And Josh with us from Grand Junction in Colorado.
Hi. I was just going to mention that probably one of the bigger monster movies that I thought was interesting was probably The Fly.
Version? The Vincent Price version or the Jeff Goldblum version?
I guess you'd start with Vincent Price, but I think they did a decent job in the Jeff Goldblum one.
Here's a clip from the Jeff Goldblum version.
It changes. Every time I look in the mirror, it's someone different, someone hideous, repulsive.
What happened?
I know an old lady who swallowed a fly. Perhaps she'll die.
Jeff Goldblum. I knew a relief pitcher who looked just like him. Anyway.
How did he do? It looked like The Fly or like
No,
Goldblum.
Like Jeff Goldblum, right. Yes. He didn't have as good a career, I'll tell you that.
Full disclosure, I am a member of the Directors Guild of America, and I have to say that is David Cronenberg's version of The Fly with Jeff Goldblum. And there's that great, great scene there in the diner where he just keeps consuming piles and piles and piles of sugar. It's a great monster movie. I'm also very fond of the original and all those sort of 50s black and white films. There's almost a subgenre in this category of Roger Corman movies.
Yes.
You know, The Attack of the Crab Monsters and Not of This Earth.
Almost any movie made by Roger Corman.
Even the Westerns.
Even the Westerns. Thanks very much for the call, Josh.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go next to, this is Andrea. Andrea in Wichita.
Hi. Hi. I was going to nominate Frankenstein, the original James Whale version.
With Colin Clive playing the mad scientist.
Yes.
I think we have a clip. There it is. There he is.
It's alive. Oh, in the name of God. Now I know what it feels like to be God.
It's overacting.
Yes, but it's one of my favorite overactors in life. It's Colin Clive.
I was going to say about the character, about the monster, is you almost feel sorry for him. You sympathize with him.
Yeah,
Well, until he kills the little girl.
Well, you know, but that was cut in many, or when it was originally released. And Andrea, I'm very thankful to you because that, yeah, one of my points is that you do feel some sympathy. And it's one of the reasons we love these movies, I think, even though I never want to see Alien again in my life. it tells you something about yourself. It tells us something about ourselves as humans or humans in different cultures. You know, what scares us? What really is monstrous? And thank you, Andrea, for mentioning those Universal pictures of the early 30s.
Because
all of those, Frankenstein, the Wolfman, which is actually 40 or 41, Dracula, you know, the Mummy. Those are all, and
the Invisible Man.
The Invisible Man, who's a monster that's not visible.
James Whale also, right?
Also James Whale. And then there's The Bride of Frankenstein with Elsa Lanchester as the bride.
Yes,
As long as we're in that territory, would you count Freaks, Todd Browning's Freaks, as a monster movie?
No, because...
Well, she turns into a monster?
She does, and she... But it's not... I mean, those are human beings. Those are, and one might say, unfortunate human beings, but there's nothing...
Well, they're monstrous human beings.
You're right. They're monstrous, but not monsters.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Andrea.
Andrea, thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to... this is Terry. Terry with us from Fresno.
Yes. My favorite one is the Blob from with Steve McQueen from the 50s, not the one from the 80s with the Dylan guy.
Here's Steve McQueen trying to rally his friends to the cause.
Would you believe me if I told you there was something inside of that rock we found tonight? Something that could wipe out this whole town?
Hey, knock it off! Go ahead, Steve.
I saw this thing kill Dr. Howland tonight.
No, not Dr. Howland.
It's amazing you guys have a clip for that. The thing was, my after I watched it, I wouldn't. My mom would make Jell-O, you know, right afterwards, and it would be kind of like eerie kind of feeling. But as you watch it as an adult now, it's so weird that these people were terrified of something that could only move a few inches at a time.
Right.
It could just leisurely walk out of its way to avoid it.
Terry, you didn't take the Jell-O and like force it through the HVAC ducts, did you?
No, nothing like that.
This is 1958. It was the first horror movie that my parents let me watch. Jackie Brennan, for his birthday party, took everybody to see The Blob, and it was terrifying.
And then shortly thereafter, there's The Tingler, where they had the little battery-operated thing on the seats. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's true, but it's important genre because it's kind of it's sort of a vegetable monster, you know,
well,
which
like,
they have
like
Jay
the
of
thing.
The Triffids. And the, that's right.
Terry, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you guys very much. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. We're talking about our favorite monster movies with Murray Horowitz. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Jay. Jay with us from Ann Arbor.
Hey, you forgot one of the best Universal monsters, and that is Creature from the Black Lagoon.
He's right.
One of my favorites, and not many people really know about him, but he's really cool.
That's one of the favorite lines in all of cinema. How did I get involved in all of this? Science, ichthyology, fish.
It's great. Creature from the Black Lagoon. You're absolutely right, Jay. And leave us not forget The Creature Walks Among Us and The Revenge of the Creature. I mean,
they're perfect sequels. You got the classic Monster Comes to Town and then the Exploring the Humanity of the Monster.
Also, probably, you'll forgive me, the cheapest monster costume anybody had.
One of the greatest.
Yeah, but one of the greatest. You know, this side of an Ed Wood film. It was, you know, flippers and a black mask.
Thanks very much for the call, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can read some of these emails. How about Cars? Stephen King's Amok Automobile.
Yep.
All right. And
that's an inanimate monster.
That's from Betty Bishop in Chester, California. Eraserhead says Hunter Kirkland in Washington. It's not your usual jump out and grab you monster, but the baby in David Lynch's Eraserhead always leaves me with the deepest sense of unease. It's an interesting departure from the usual movie monster because it's not even directly menacing, yet something about it takes pathos to the level of horror.
Yeah, I can't remember I don't remember if there's anything supernatural
about
that. I don't think so. But it's an important point, which is that there are some, if you think about the names of like Jason and Freddy and those, these are, you know, sort of regular guys, you know, there's something disarming about a baby. There's something disarming. One that is demonic possession and supernatural is The Exorcist, where
sure.
This beautiful, cute little girl. But the voice is not so cute.
The voice isn't, well, that's Mercedes McCambridge.
You bet, with a couple of quarts of bourbon in her.
Now, I have to say, I get to make a nomination here.
Okay.
And I'm going to pick one stolen from the best writer ever, William Shakespeare. And, of course, that is Forbidden Planet.
Well, you low-living contraption, I ought to take a can opener to you.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing. Yes, relatively simple alcohol molecules with traces of fusel oil. Would 60 gallons be sufficient?
Earl Holliman there, interacting with Robbie the Robot.
Robbie the Robot, who's not a monster, but Walter Pidgeon's id is a real monster.
Creatures from the id.
From created by a human. You know, one of the things we haven't talked about, speaking of benign monsters, right now there's a film called Where the Wild Things Are. And there are these kind of fantastical creatures in the Star Wars series that are almost incidental, in Disney films and in Neverending Story. I mean, these are monsters who, you know, could be capable of doing you harm, but they're benign.
There's also, we have to ask Murray, your favorite one.
Well, we talked about humanity, didn't we? And people who've been listening to this show for a long time know that I love King Kong. It is a perfect movie, and he is a perfect monster.
And here's the original King Kong from 1933, just been introduced as the eighth wonder of the world, and the press is snapping pictures.
Hey, wait a minute, hold on. He thinks you're attacking the girl.
All of them roar. It's a swell picture. He can't get
And as you might be able to tell, those chains were not quite strong enough.
I get chills just listening to this. Isn't it awful? I get sentimental about the worst things. But it is a perfect movie. And in many ways, it's the archetype for a monster. And for a monster for whom you ultimately feel sorry, it's not his fault.
Murray Horowitz, talk of the nation's favorite film buff, with us here in Studio 3A. And here's an email from, this is from Jill in Baltimore. I got some good home cred from my middle schoolers and husband for Netflixing The Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
He turned around and he did see tomatoes hiding in his tree. Now he's just a memory. I know I'm going to miss her. A tomato ate my sister. Sacramento fell today. They're marching into San Jose. Tomatoes are on their way.
Tomorrow it's Talk of the Nation Science Friday. They'll talk about the 40th anniversary of the Internet. We'll see you again on Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.
The National Guard has run away. Tomatoes will have their day. Attack of the killer tomatoes. Attack of the killer tomatoes. They'll beat you, bash you, squish you, mash you, chew you up for brunch, and finish you off for dinner or lunch. Munch, munch.